This is Too Political, the podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. My name's Arthur.
And this is Jason.
And together we're Too Political. Hi, and welcome to the first episode of Too Political. This is our new standalone podcast that Jason and I have put together. It's a spin-off of the Amarin's podcast.
We're a spin-off now.
Yes, we are Maud to All in the Family, you could say. Oh, wait a minute, that would make me Archie probably, and I don't like that. But speaking,
yes, it would.
A slight digression. Anybody who's been to amarinspodcast.com, which is the home of my podcast, may have noticed that Roger Green left a comment on our last Politicast, as it was called in the old days, with a link.
I didn't see that.
Yes, well, he has a link to it's a YouTube video, but it's audio of Nixon audio tapes when Nixon was still president.
He's
talking about All in the Family, and he goes on these diatribes about homosexuality and drug use and all kinds of weird things. It's fascinating listening. I mean, the man was weird. We all know that now. But
well, he was his nickname was Dick, so I mean, what can you expect from that?
Yeah, it should have been Dickhead, but anyway.
Well, no.
But speaking of dickheads, how's that for a segue? There's been
that
one in the news.
Well done. Yes. A really big fat one. Now,
yes.
Well, you go ahead.
Well,
it would probably be improper to call him a right-wing fascist drug addict because, you know, that would be wrong and we would never do that. We would never call Rush Limbaugh those things because that would be wrong.
It would be wrong.
And implying in some way, one way or the other, that he was these things would just be wrong. So we're not going to do that.
That's right.
So anyway, I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Well, I like Keith Olbermann has taken to calling him Boss Limbaugh because he has appointed himself the head of all things conservative, including the Republican Party. It all started, it all started when Obama was elected, and Rush promptly said that he hoped that Obama failed. And, of course, a lot of people jumped on him about that at the time, but he stuck to his guns. Well, fast forward a little bit, and just recently, Washington, D.C., was the Conservative Political Action Committee annual meeting.
Yes, they were swarming all over the place.
It was all over the news. Just as a little aside, I thought it was interesting that the CPAC conference got all of this media attention. They claimed that there were 9,000 people there, the most that they'd ever had. Oh. But at the same time, there were 12,000, mostly students, who were attending a conference and weekend event about power, specifically opposing coal-fired power because they say there's no such thing as clean coal technology.
Clean coal, yeah. There's an entire Metro Subway campaign, or there was an entire Metro Subway campaign about it. They had like the abominable snowman and a mermaid and an alien as not someone from Mexico but someone from outer space.
Yeah, well, there was 12,000 of them,
those things.
Yeah. And most of them were a goodly number of them were students. They were all pretty much grassroots activists, and yet they got no media attention whatsoever. But these self-satisfied people of CPAC were the obsession of the media. But I digress. There were a lot of really weird things that came out of that meeting, and none the least of which was Rush Limbaugh's keynote or closing address, which was over an hour, and I actually heard the entire thing. I did this on behalf of my people. I listened so you don't have to. It was god-awful, let me tell you.
Yeah, a lot of people say it's just completely rambling.
It was he didn't stay on topic more than a few seconds at a time, and he would go off on these weird tangents that he made a racist joke and claimed he wasn't making a racist joke, that he was making fun of Joe Biden, he says. Yeah, right, whatever. He was supposedly quoting the preamble to the Constitution when, in fact, he was actually quoting the Declaration of Independence, and he screwed up that quote. It was all kinds of really weird things. But the main thing he was trying to do, I think, was establish himself as the leader of all conservatism in America, the sole arbiter of what's correct and right in both senses of the word. Well, he, of course, repeated his thing that he wants Obama to fail there, and to great cheers and applause and so on from the assembled poobahs of CPAC. And he was roundly criticized for that, including by what's his name, Michael Steele, the the so-called head of the Republican National Committee. And he said that he called Limbaugh an entertainer and said that some of his word, I've forgotten the exact word, if it's excessive or whatever, it doesn't matter. Because the point is that Limbaugh then attacked Steele and said, you're not in charge of the Republicans, you're just in charge of the Republican National Committee, and get back behind the scenes, get to the back of the bus, and do what you do. And so then, of course, Steele apologized to Limbaugh. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Well, among the other people who've been attacking Limbaugh was Mark Sanford? I've forgotten his name. The Republican
this is the
governor.
Guy from
One of the Carolinas. I can't even remember that. I should have looked that up. I'm sorry I didn't. It's not about them. It's all about Rush, as we all know. And he attacked Limbaugh for saying that as well. So did Eric Cantor. Now, Eric Cantor, about a year ago or so, set up a website called I Stand With Rush. And he was 100% behind what Rush Limbaugh was doing. And then he's trying to distance himself now. He's saying he's not distancing himself. All of which seems to suggest that the Republican Party has completely blown apart and nobody is in charge. And Rush Limbaugh has stepped into the vacuum. And of course, he has his giant ego, which sucks the life out of everything. Mm-hmm. So vacuum is a good word there. And is promoting himself as essentially the head of all things conservative, which amuses Democrats and liberals in general to no end, I'm sure. Because if it comes down to a debate between a blowhard entertainer on TV and the government of the United States, I suspect the entertainer is going to come out second best overall.
Well, I think the thing that's, if you step back, sort of the ironic thing about it, and the thing that is completely the hypocrisy that just reeks from this whole thing, is that anybody who criticized the war, or George Bush's wars, the thing in Iraq, or the war on terror, was immediately branded by these same people as traitors, un-American, they were for terrorists, blah, 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 blah. So I don't quite understand how they then think that they can get away with, saying, well, I mean, I understand, but it's just the height of hypocrisy. And it's sort of like, it's interesting, all of a sudden they've rediscovered the First Amendment to the Constitution. Oh, yeah, right to free speech. Yeah, how about that one? Yeah. And then this completely disingenuous remark on his part about how, oh, I really wasn't, saying that I wanted the, I really wasn't saying I don't want any president to fail, but it's like, yes, that's what you were saying. You wanted him to fail. And, I didn't want the country, to fall apart. Well, it's one thing to say we need to oppose, we need to put up ideas to that are we and be against his policies, or try and shape them in some way, shape or form, because we don't want socialism. It's like, please give me a break.
About which, in a minute, but go on.
Yeah, if the notion is that we are heading it towards socialism, George Bush started it. Sort of leaving that aside, but that's not what he talked about. He talked about failure, and the way things are now set up, if Obama fails, that means the his economic policies fail. That's the only game in town. That means the country collapses.
Yeah. Yeah, what Limbaugh is really calling for is the failure of the United States and therefore the entire world's economy. He's being really dishonest in his rhetoric, which is not unusual for him. Let's be honest.
He's a big fat blowhard.
Yeah, he's not honest about anything. He got a lot of his historic facts wrong in his speech as well.
Well, there's a surprise.
Yeah.
The other thing that this again points to is how, I'm sorry, the Republicans now put the Republican Party first before the United States of America.
Yeah.
They did this with the war on terrorism. Here was George Bush's moment to unite the country in a single, right after 9/11, to say this is what we need to do as a country. And Karl Rove and friends, with obviously Bush going along with this, decided we can use the war on terrorism to construct a permanent Republican majority.
Yeah.
And this is the exact same thing. The whole notion is that, if this fails, if the country collapses, then we can come back into power.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm sorry. The whole notion is like, I love the reactions, like, you know, and we've just got to go back to, you know, letting the markets take care of themselves, and government intervention is just this terrible, awful thing. It's like, you know, we discussed this the last time. It's like, the government has to intervene now because the markets didn't work. The geniuses failed,
yeah.
And somebody else has to come along and, you know, pump this money in as the public, the consumers and the private sector contract. Because
if
the government isn't doing it, then there's going to be a complete collapse. And what they had on ABC News tonight is they talked about the stimulus package and how people are being hired for construction jobs now.
Yeah,
you know, they're talking about this company that's in a suburb of Washington D.C. and how they've hired back like 40 or so people who'd been laid off, and they're hoping to hire back as many as 300. Well, that's a way to start the recovery.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that annoys me so much about this, and we talked last time about how they've been slandering the name and reputation of Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal, making up all kinds of lies about it, you know, basically saying that black is white and white is black, you know, covering up all of the successes. Because the failure of the New Deal isn't what it did. It's that it didn't go far enough. And Limbaugh and most of the neocons, and well, the Republican Party, same thing, have been saying a lot of that same sort of talking point, nonsense talking points. And one of them is that, one of the latest ones I heard, is that the reason that the whole housing thing happened was because of Jimmy Carter. Yes, it was Jimmy Carter's fault, because he signed legislation that outlawed redlining, which meant that banks could no longer refuse to loan into mortgages for low-income areas. Well, to hear the right wing say it, that law required them to give money to people who couldn't afford to pay back the mortgage. And that is an absolute, outright, bald-faced lie. That's not what was in the legislation.
The whole thing is this, is that, yes, government bears part of the responsibility for this. There is no question, because of
Absolutely.
Some of these laws they passed. The problem was that along came George Bush, and they decided there will be no oversight at all.
Yep. And the Republican Congress didn't use any oversight.
Right, and if there had been some amount of oversight, if government had done its job,
yep.
It's possible, and this is, again, possible, that we would have had a situation where government would have come along and said, no, we won't do this. Or if George Bush had decided to ask for some sacrifice for the American people when we were involved in two wars, in all likelihood, this wouldn't have happened either. But they did not do either of those. And that is why we are in the situation that we are. You know, it's again the thing that I said last time. Greed can be good. Avarice is very, very bad. And this moved into the realm of avarice. And that's when you need the government to come along and say, no. Again, we had this big thing about AIG last night on the news, and it's too big to fail. Then that says to me that in the future, one of the things is that has to be considered when these entities start to get that big is that we have to prevent them from becoming so big. So if the natural market forces are going to take their effect, you should then allow these things to be able to fail if they stumble. You can't allow something to become so big that it's at your, you know, you're at its mercy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the things, I mean, I'm sure we've said this in the past, is that there's plenty of blame to go around as to how this mess came about. But I think it's inescapable to say that if the Bush administration and the Republican Congress prior to 2006, well, even in 2006, because the Democrats had a titular majority but not a real one, if they had been doing their jobs and had been exercising the oversight that was already in the law, we're not talking about, at least I'm not talking about making new regulations, just doing what was already there, that we probably could have prevented a lot of this stuff from happening. Probably not all of it, but certainly a good chunk of it. At least we would have been aware of it with enough time to head off maybe the worst of the trouble. But anyway, I guess for me the bottom line is that I have to admit that I do get a sort of sick delight in watching the troubles that the Republicans are going through in all their infighting with Rush Limbaugh. It just, it strikes me as hilarious.
It is amusing. And what, just sort of one last thing on the point that you raised. What I find fascinating is that they're coming up with all these justifications so that to lay the blame somewhere else and not to take any of the blame, that there's like, oh, we're blameless in this. It's like, No, I'm sorry. You were in power when all this happened. Part of the blame goes to you, not something that happened 20 years ago or 30 years ago.
Yeah. Enough of him.
Yes. Well, I have two little facts that I'm going to impart. Since it's March 5th where you are,
it is
March 4th here. This is Happy Crispus Atticus Day and the Waking of the Insects.
I hope they're not related in any way.
No, they're not.
Okay.
Crispus Atticus was one of the people who was shot during the Boston Massacre, March 5th, 1770. For some a little historical perspective there. There's a little fact. And the Waking of the Insects festival or event, I'm not exactly sure what should be added there, is something in that happens in China and Korea, and it's sort of like Groundhog's Day here, but the notion is that this is the beginning of spring. It's called the Waking of the Insects. So that's when they come out of hibernation, I guess.
I just posted about the approaching equinox on my blog. Although it actually was the last thing I've posted. I've been so busy, I haven't had a chance to add anything. But yes, we're going in the Southern Hemisphere. We're heading headlong into autumn, just as you're heading headlong into spring.
Yes.
But so for a brief seasons sort of similar for a while.
Yeah, even though we had snow on Monday and you would think the world had come to an end, I will say I posted something that I thought was extremely amusing to my blog about that, and it's called Oh No Snow.
Yeah.
So it's and some pretty nice pictures too.
Yeah, I got a chuckle out of that post, I have to say.
So
actually, one of those things you were mentioning reminded me of something else. Not to dwell on the far right, but you talked about the Boston Massacre, which made me think of the Boston Tea Party, which made me think of the far right launching these Tea Party protests where they dump at least symbolic tea into harbors and lakes and things around the country. It's supposed to protest the taxes on the rich that are part of the new budget and so on. And the funny thing about it is that even at the CPAC conference, they were all pretending that this is some sort of legitimate sudden groundswell of grassroots right-wing activism, when in fact it's actually been planned for months. And the website that they're using was actually registered something like 2 years ago. So there's nothing new about this Tea Party thing.
Well, you know, in this day and age, why do you even go to that? You know, oh, it's this grass, when it can be so easily verified that that's not the case.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, no matter who, no matter what the issue is, no matter what side, you know, left, right, center, this notion of, oh, and it's this great groundswell. And when somebody can easily look into it and says, well, no, it's not. I don't understand why you do that, because that's just a distraction for what you're trying to the cause you're trying to promote. It just seems very, very foolish.
Yeah, it in the age of the internet, where everything is pretty much instantly verifiable, it is kind of silly to be pretending something is what it's not, when you know anybody can check it and find out for themselves if they really want
to.
But anyway, well, also in the news was something that I wanted to talk about, which was has to do with insects in a way. And that's that the Bush administration.
We're still talking about them.
Yeah, they're insects. No, they, as we all know, wrote a lot of really inflammatory memos. And when I say they, I mean primarily a man named John Yoo, and he was working for the Office of Legal Counsel. Now, the Office of Legal Counsel is essentially the de facto determiner of laws for any presidential administration, because they issue opinions which are considered to be legal precedent. They tell the president and the administration what they can and cannot do. And the Office of Legal Counsel was, and John, you in particular, were involved in a lot of really bad opinions. Among them are the ones we already know about, things like that it was legal to spy on people in the U.S. illegally. Illegal warrantless wiretaps were in the Office of Legal Counsel's opinion, actually legal. And they said that torture was legal, all of these kinds of things. And we all know about all those. But recently, the Obama Justice Department has started releasing a whole bunch of new memos that were also issued, but nobody knew about before. Among them were a series of memos written by John Yoo. He claimed that the president of the United States had the power, if he believed that he was pursuing terrorists in the United States, he had the power to use the army to go in and to seize people, that anyone, U.S. citizen or foreign national, didn't matter, could be seized without probable cause and could be held without charge or trial indefinitely if the president believed that they were involved in terrorism. They also issued a memo saying that because of the war on terror and all that, that the president had the power to ignore free speech and free press rights, essentially repealing the First Amendment. And these are, in my view, treasonous opinions to be making, because essentially what they do is they give the president legal justification for usurping the Constitution and the separation of powers and basically taking dictatorial powers. And about 5 days before the Bush administration finally left office, the then Office of Legal Counsel issued new memos saying, well, they weren't wrong, but we're appealing them anyway. Mm-hmm. And the reason they were doing that is because they were concerned that the people involved in them and in preserving these memos would face criminal prosecution for what they did. Well, as it happens, Senator Patrick Leahy is starting, he's looking into whether or not there should be a truth commission to reveal the extent of the Bush administration's illegality and unconstitutional actions. And this is certainly not going to help Bush's case at all. One of the problems with these memos is that they, as I said, they have the power of precedent. And if they're not formally repudiated, they remain precedent, which means that any future president then could claim that they have the right to illegally spy on Americans or to arrest and detain Americans without probable cause or charge or trial or usurp the First Amendment or what have you. Now, the Justice Department is investigating a lot of these lawyers who are involved in the Office of Legal Counsel, and it is probable that at least some of them will end up being disbarred over it because the opinions that they made were so obviously contrary to public law that they are essentially guilty of the highest form of legal malpractice. Whether or not any of them ever see jail time is a whole other matter. And personally, I would love to see John Yoo charged with treason because I believe that's what he's guilty of. I don't think he will be. I don't think he'll ever see the inside of a prison cell, though I think he should. I just hope that this Truth Commission goes forward and that they get to the bottom of the extent of the illegality of the Bush administration so that it can be publicly repudiated, and there's a new legal precedent saying that all of these opinions that were issued were in fact illegal and unconstitutional, and no future president should even think of trying to do it again. Because otherwise I'm concerned that a future George Bush, God forbid, might do the same sort of thing all over again. And that's my little speech.
Well, it was very little, wasn't it?
Very little speech.
I agree. I don't know how much... I don't know how much you can sort of go back, and I don't know. It does need to be investigated, and it does need to be looked at. But I'm not sure, sort of what it does going forward. There's so much sort of at stake with other things. It's how much does it sort of can the Republicans use it to say, oh, that's some sort of a witch hunt, blah, 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 blah.
But yeah, well, they can say that, but if criminal activity is being uncovered, they're not going to get much traction with it.
Well, that's true. And I think as these things continue to come out, people are going to continue to comment on how, look at what he was almost able to do. So
yeah.
I think that does lend itself to being.
Well, it does go to show how close the U.S. came to being under dictatorship, because Bush had the legal opinions he felt that he had the legal opinions he would have needed to seize dictatorial powers if he had chosen to do so. Now, I'm not willing to go so far as to give him any credit for not having seized those powers. It could just be that he was certain that if he had, it would have been ended up being a constitutional crisis, and he would have ended up being impeached and removed from office. I don't know. I don't think that it was any goodness on his part that restrained him. I'm actually quite frankly surprised that he didn't use those powers, but I'm not willing to ascribe any good intent on his part. But as I also have said in the past, I don't actually think he was calling the shots anyway, but he's gone. Good riddance.
Yeah, to very bad rubbish.
Yes. Well, there. Speaking of Congress and all that, there's one brief thing I wanted to bring up, and I think this was on Keith Olbermann. I can't remember. But they were talking about the omnibus spending bill, and John McCain, remember him? John McCain got up, and he was talking about earmarks and how terrible it was, and he's get this, his affected, sad tone, and that's not change, Mr. President, and all this crap. Well, it turns out that the Republicans are far more responsible for any earmarks in this budget than the Democrats are.
The thing that I heard is about 40% of the earmarks were from Republicans. Even so, it's not like they don't participate at all. It's
exactly.
Like, where did that 40% of those earmarks come from? The Martians didn't come down and put them in there. They were from Republicans.
Yeah. The main point about that is that the percentage of the budget that is in earmarks is directly in line with what President Obama promised. He never promised to eliminate all earmarks from the budget completely. He wanted to bring the number down to a certain percentage, and it's actually at present, it's below that. So, I mean, McCain has nothing to complain about.
The thing that, this is the whole thing about, one man's pork is another man's bacon,
yeah.
And this is another man's bacon. And some of these things sound ridiculous and silly. You know, there was like the butterfly sanctuary somewhere, and there's $1.8 or $1.2 million to study swine odor in Iowa. I kid you not. And I think it was Tom Harkin. This is important to the people who live in my state and in North Carolina and somewhere and any people who live near swine. And it's just like, okay, I won't laugh at this. But oh my God, it was just like it's a Monty Python skit. And that might be an extreme, but they pull these things out and they're absurd and they're weird and they're odd. But I would be really curious about, okay, who gets the money to study swine smell?
That would go to a university, I'm sure.
And who does that help? You know, they talk about this, that it's this terrible, awful spending. But what does it do?
Well, the thing is,
like the butter. Oh, we're going to have a butterfly sanctuary. Okay, well, who does that employ? They've got to build it. You know, there are ramifications to this, and if it, this is what I think this should be. Is are you going to get your bang for the buck?
Yeah.
You know, who is this really going to help? How is this going to inject money into the economy?
Yeah, and just because it's in there doesn't mean it's bad.
Right, and building the butterfly sanctuary might be a better investment of our dollars than giving a tax cut. You know, I mean, I don't know anything about it, but that's sort of my, it's this, all these terrible, awful horror stories. Well, where's the money going? How is it going to be employed, so to speak? Who is it going to employ?
Yeah.
And if it's only going to academics, well, then maybe you can say maybe something could be better spent. But they talked about they're going to build some museum somewhere. Well, okay, isn't that silly? Well, they're going to build the museum, so that means they're going to employ people to build the museum, and I was assuming they're going to employ people to run the museum. So, you know, what does it entail, or and how realistic is it to succeed? This yeah. sort of stuff that never seems to be
yeah.
considered.
Attacking earmarks just for the sake of attacking earmarks is pointless and silly. It's headline grabbing. But if they can provide evidence for why this particular earmark is so bad, just because it sounds silly doesn't necessarily mean it
right.
is.
Right.
Yeah. But speaking of things that sound silly, to me anyway, and the Congress, is this whole thing that's going on now aimed at giving the District of Columbia an actual voting representative in the House of Representatives. Because as most people in America should know, the District of District of Columbia, since it's not a state, only has a non-voting observer, Eleanor Holmes Norton. And she can vote at the committee stage. She can vote in committee, but she is not allowed to vote on any measure brought before the House. Well, I don't know if she doesn't vote, but it doesn't count anyway.
Right.
She might register her opinion, I suppose. But this proposal would give the District of Columbia one voting representative in the House of Representatives and none in the Senate in exchange for giving one representative to Utah.
I thought it was Nevada.
No, it's Utah.
Oh, Utah. Okay.
And the thing is, they claim that Utah was undercounted in the last census and it should have had one more representative than it has. Well, Chris, a lot of states claim that. But putting that issue aside, the idea behind it is that Utah is about as Republican as you can get. You can't get much more Republican than Utah. And so they figure that they're trading a absolute dead cert Democratic seat for the District of Columbia with an absolute dead cert Republican seat for Utah, and it will keep the balance the same.
Bart, I'm sorry. See,
what's that?
It would also be a black person, probably.
Yeah, well, it'd also probably be another Mormon in the
right.
House as well. Comes to that. Yes, and
the additional wrinkle now to this is that there is this rider on restricting the gun legislation in the District
yes.
of Columbia, which Congress loves to do. I love these Republicans talking about states' rights and how they want to meddle in the. It's like, you know, huh. You know, Strom Thurmond, Trent Lott, Jesse Helms, and was just like, I wonder how you would like it if someone in Washington, D.C. decided how things in, you know, Charlotte should be run. I think you would
yeah.
be screaming like a stuck bull, you know.
Yeah.
Huge amount of hypocrisy on their part.
This raises a lot of interesting issues. I was listening to a discussion about it on Democracy Now!, and The main problem is that there are some people in the District of Columbia who are adamantly opposed to this idea, not because they don't want voting representation, but because they want absolute statehood, that they feel that it's irrational and unreasonable for exactly what you're describing, how a member of Congress from Wyoming has any right to have a say in overturning the laws
right.
of the District of Columbia. And that is, frankly, absurd. However, the rest of the country doesn't want D.C. to be a state because, well, I shouldn't say the rest of the country. The Republican states don't want D.C. to be a state because it would mean three more Democrats in Congress.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't know what the way forward is. If it's not a state, then essentially the way it is now is it's a possession of the United States, is what it
right.
amounts to, because Congress does have the right to overturn any law that D.C. passes, and they frequently do.
An individual member of Congress can stop stuff. You know, Jesse Helms was
famous
for this
yeah.
on domestic partnership and sodomy law, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. I would much rather prefer, which someone talked about it at some point in time, is that if we're not going to get voting representation in Congress, then we shouldn't have to pay taxes. I would love that!
Well, it does seem fair because, after all, part of the reason the U.S. was formed in the first place was a protest against taxation without representation. It doesn't
seem
just, right.
That works, you know, absolutely wonderfully for me. I love that immensely. And it's been a long-standing issue, and it's for a very, 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 very long time, it was also heavily motivated by race.
Yeah.
And that the vast majority of people who opposed it were— you know, Southerners. And it was because, I mean, you know, in all likelihood, you would have, you know, representatives who are African American.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they have on the DC Council is this setup where, knowing that, you know, if you had elections without some sort of rules or controls, there would always be Democrats elected. So there is sort of the Republican seat.
Yeah.
Or the, you know, or the independent seat, which they have on the city council, because otherwise you would never, you know, a Republican would never be elected here.
Yeah.
You know, because there are probably only six of them.
Yeah.
Okay, eight.
Well, and part of the problem with this whole thing, too, is you're absolutely right that a lot of it was motivated by race, but a lot of it, too, was the fact that there have been DC administrations who have been, how does one put it delicately, not very good. And so it sort of gave ammunition to those.
I'm sorry. What are you talking about? Oh, I got some stuff on my nose. What is that?
Well, the point basically is that it gave ammunition to the opponents of any sort of I don't even know what to call it. Well, statehood certainly, but any sort of legitimate governance, self-governance for the district. But the thing is, there comes a point when you've got to look beyond that. And I mean, because there's no requirement in the Constitution that a state be a well-run state, after all.
Well, it's true. And one of the
Louisiana. Hey, just
got
as an
any
aside,
money in, got any I, money in your freezer art?
No, if I can just have a little aside for a moment here, this is something that really bugs me. The right wing in the U.S. is falling all over themselves, or they were, about how wonderful Bobby Jindal is. They were until he gave that stupid speech, which was god awful. But anyway, they're falling
speech,
all over themselves.
Is that what it was?
Bobby is not his name. He's made that up. He's the son of immigrants. He's a person of color. But Bobby is not his name, and they fall all over him. If he was using his real first name, and I've forgotten what it is, frankly, would they still be liking him so much? Because they certainly don't like Barack Hussein Obama. But anyway, go on, carry on. It really bugs me the way that the right wing is giving sainthood to Bobby Jindal.
They trot him out. They trot out Steele and say, "Oh, look, it was just like watching the coverage of the Republican convention. Oh, there's a black person. Oh, there's another one. Oh, he kind of looks like the help. Oh, let's, you know, it's like the six black people who were there.
Yeah, the Republican convention had a record low percentage of African Americans, from what I remember.
Well, any person of color, this notion of what I don't understand is that, you know, they're going to be true to their principles and these core, hardcore conservative, you know, values. Well, they lost in states where they haven't lost before, and that seems completely, I'm sorry, pardon the pun, lost on them.
Yeah.
So maybe they need to be in the wilderness for a generation.
It would probably help America. But about this whole DC thing, because all of these issues of race and class and all that enter into it, I mean, we have to be honest, there are a lot of really sticky issues that would have to be sorted out. There's a lot of property in the district that is owned by foreign governments because it's technically embassy property. And some of them are basically in ruin because of turmoil in the country. As a matter of fact, I saw an article on the Washington Post Online about various properties in very swanky neighborhoods that had been embassies.
The Iraqi embassy is in DuPont Circle.
Well, that's one too. But I mean, it was an African nation, as I recall. But it doesn't really matter what the nation is. The point is that, through wars or civil war or economic collapse in the country, that they can't maintain the embassy and it falls into ruin and it brings down the values of the area around that. They're also not taxable as property.
Even more so is the huge amount of property that the federal government owns, and the fact that it's the inability of the district to run its affairs in such a manner that there are things that are beyond its control.
Yeah.
It's like, police the inauguration.
Yeah.
Oh, provide protection for the president. I mean, the Secret Service is there, but it's the ambulance that follows along, the police that block off the roads, yeah. all these types of things. You know, the World Bank meetings. Well, it's the DC police, and you know, the government does pay for some of it, but it's it greatly hamstrings the ability of the district to do, you know, what it does. And there are yeah. several universities here. That property isn't usually taxable. There are lots of churches. That property isn't taxable. There are a lot of government buildings. That isn't taxable. There's embassies. That isn't taxable. There's yeah. a lot of stuff here that, you know, and I'm not saying that administrations they've run things badly, because they've run things badly. There's, you know, no question about that. But the fact of the matter is that there are a lot of difficulties in, you know, governing the city, because there's so much of it that's not theirs to govern.
Yeah. Yeah. All of which does mean that there would be obstacles to be overcome, that there'd have to be some sort of government negotiations and so on.
Well, yeah.
To sort it out.
I don't think there's any question about that.
I'm not personally convinced that there ultimately is any solution other than statehood if the people of the district are to have full voting participation, because essentially their status is no better than Puerto Rico, is what it amounts to.
Actually, Puerto Rico's is better.
Yeah, because they can tax their land, for one thing.
Well, and I don't think they pay federal taxes. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, the other thing that they always talk about is we can... what is the word? Retrocede back into Maryland. I'm sure the people in Maryland would really like to have us.
Yeah, I had heard that, because some of the land on the other side was given back to Virginia, wasn't it? Or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Some really prime real estate, which was where the Pentagon is. If people who know Washington, D.C., where the Pentagon is, where Crystal City is. I think Alexandria, large chunks of Arlington. It was a diamond, and they cut off one of the ends.
Yeah.
So, or one of the sides, I should say. So, and if you look at it, it was sort of this diamond, and everything would have been equidistant. And yeah, there's a lot of very prime real estate, and they kind of went, "Oh, what are we ever going to do with this?"
You know? Oops.
Bam! Wrong answer. Big mistake. Yeah. But you know, who knew? So.
Yeah, I don't think that going back into part of Maryland would be a very good idea, because, I mean, ultimately there would probably be another Democrat in the House of Representatives, but it means there wouldn't be two senators. But it's not even about that. It's about ensuring that the people in the district are fully represented. And I don't know. I mean, I could see that the only thing the Republicans would go with would be making it part of Maryland again.
Well, believe it or not, that was one of the amendments that was offered and was killed. I think it was this week or last week, about, you know, becoming part of Maryland again.
Hmm. I suppose they could make the district like a county of Maryland or something.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's what they would do. But that would, I don't know exactly what that would do. I don't know how many more representatives that would. I guess it would only be one more electoral. Well, no, it would be.
Well, it depends on how close Maryland is to getting another representative anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
Because it might theoretically end up with two. But I don't know. And I should mention that actually this question was given to me by listener Candyland, and asked that we discuss it. So. And since Jason lives in Washington, I thought, ooh, that's a good topic.
There for 30 years.
So. Oh, my God.
Yeah, over 30 years. So, yeah, there's been a huge change. I when essentially arrived on the scene when they essentially had their first elected mayor. Because everybody was essentially home rule, as they call it. And that sort of started right around the time that I showed up, so in 1977.
Yikes!
So, well, yeah. I mean, it has, and then of course, the Marion Barry years and the Marion Barry comeback, and yeah, well, okay, that worked out so well, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh well. So anyway, that are that are this is National Grammar Day. That are some topics.
Yes. You did so well.
Yeah. That are some topics.
Are your insects waking?
The locusts have been screaming. Not today, though, because we have a really blustery and rainy day here. But this is, of course, the first of the standalone podcasts. But in a sense, it's standalone in name only, because this one is being posted, well, they will be for the time being posted to the Amarin's feed. There will be an independent feed. It isn't set up yet. The site is set up. Which is 2podcast.com. By the time you hear this, I will have fixed a little glitch that made that not show properly.
Try again. It's what again?
2Political. What did I say? 2Podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. God. So one day I might actually learn what it's called.
Yeah,
it's 2.
Yeah, you know.
2Political.com. And it's number 2Political.com. God.
Doug, you've hit 50, and it's just been downhill ever since.
It's downhill from 40, I'll tell you. But
hey, I gave you 10 years.
Yeah. Well, it's been a slow, steady decline. Mm. But I'm also hoping to get a K7 comment line set up, so anybody who wants to leave a phone comment can do so. For the time being, they can leave one on the Amarin's number, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But I'll put it in the show notes. Well, just go to amarinspodcast.com. It's easier. We'll also have email addresses, but I've been too busy to get that set up as well. So
you can leave a comment on 206-666-5172.
Thank you.
And you can reach me, and or not reach me, but read all about wife in Washington, D.C. at jasonsviewfromdc.blogspot.com.
And, of course, you can find the show notes for this right now at amarinspodcast.com, and it will be at 2political.com, and where you hopefully will find details about how to subscribe to the feed if you don't want to continue with the Amarin's feed, although I don't know why you wouldn't want to, but be that as it may.
Very subtle there.
Well, for the outro today, I'm just going to play our official, that should be like a drum roll or something, our official promo. Actually, I could dig up a sound effect in GarageBand, I'm sure. But anyway.
Okay. I at great personal effort, I did that. But just never mind. I won't be insulted at all. Just go
good.
Ahead. Finish the damn podcast.
Good. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Well, that's it for this first episode. In future episodes, we're going to have guests, and we'll have more fun and frivolity as the time goes on. And by the way, I said that long before Auntie Vera started her podcast. So that's it for today. That's it from Auckland, New Zealand.
And that's it from Washington, D.C. Take care, everybody.
Bye. Hi, my name's Arthur.
And my name's Jason.
And we're the hosts of 2Political, a podcast in which two old friends talk about politics, the news, and whatever else we think of. You know, we've been friends for a long time.
Yes, a very long time.
We've always talked about news and current events.
We've been going on like this for years. Now you can listen in.
You can find us on iTunes or go to our website, 2Political.com. That's the number 2Political.com. What's that name again?
2Political. 2Political. 2Political.